Good to see all of you this morning. Appreciate so much your interest in spiritual things, your coming for the Bible class and to study with us about the history and geography of the Bible. I think that for most of you, at least if your comments have any merit at all, you've enjoyed the study of history and geography, and we're not through yet. There's a lot more for us to talk about. But in our study at this point, we're studying or concluding our study of the period of the Herods. And that would be on page 167 in your lesson book. And as we're studying about the Herods, one of the things that we've noted is that there are more than one. There are several of them. And the family of Herods came from Edom. They were not Jews, though they lived among the Jews and knew the law, supposedly, of the Jews. They were not of Jewish lineage, and that in itself created some problems. But we want to talk a little bit this morning about who some of these characters were by way of review. We've talked about most of them, I think, already. So we'll just skip the surface of the water, as it were, as we go through these just a little bit more. As we look at this particular chart, it's the one that's in your lesson book. I forget the page numbers. At 168, I believe, at the top of the page. This chart, you'll see the circles representing the various Herods that we have studied. And we began this study talking about Herod Antipas, the Idumean, who rebuilt the temple and granted the Jews a number of privileges. We've talked about that. We talked about his son, Herod the Great, who is called the Great because of the many great building projects that he engaged in. And someone asked me, did he call himself that, or was that something that just came to be? And I don't know the answer to that. It's likely something that just came to be because of all of the building projects that he engaged in. But Herod the Great was very suspicious about anybody that he thought might overthrow his authority. And even his two sons, he killed them, and he killed one, at least, of his 10 wives that he had, because he was suspicious about the things that they were participating in. You'll also note that it was Herod the Great in Matthew chapter 1 and 2, where Jesus was born and the wise men came, and Herod the Great asked them about where the king of the Jews was to be born. And of course they had made inquiry of Herod about the king of the Jews. And the wise men from the Old Testament text indicated where this was to be. Well, Herod the Great said, you go find out and come back and tell me. And what did those wise men hear? What were they told? Go a different way, because Herod the Great, it's his desire to kill the Messiah. Now, the interesting thing about that is Herod the Great perceived the kingdom of Christ to be a threat to his political power. So he wanted to kill him. Now, when we found that these wise men did not go back and tell Herod the Great, he ordered that all the little babies in Bethlehem, that they be killed 2 years old and under. So there was a great slaughter in that day. And we noted in Matthew chapter 2 that this too was according to the Old Testament prophets. Then we talked about Herod Archelaus and Herod Antipas and Herod Philip, and also this man, Herod Philip, by a different wife of Herod the Great. We note, and perhaps should start here, with Herod Philip. Number one, he was disinherited by Herod the Great because of suspicions of betrayal. But Herod Philip had married Herodias. Now, the interesting thing about that is Herod Antipas came over to visit Herod Philip, which, as you see on the chart, was his half-brother. And he had a great liking for Herod Philip's wife. And so the text tells us that Herod Antipas married Herodias, his brother Philip's wife. And we were talking some about that text in Matthew chapter 14. Would encourage you to turn to that. Matthew chapter 14. beginning in verse 1. Matthew 14, beginning in verse 1. It says, at that season, Herod the Tetrarch heard the report concerning Jesus and said unto his servants, this is John the Baptist. He is risen from the dead. And therefore do these powers work in him. Now, Herod has heard of the work that Jesus is doing. But Herod had put John the Baptist to death. And so he thinks that Jesus is John the Baptist raised from the dead. And if you'll note in verse 3, it says, for Herod had laid hold on John and bound him and put him in prison for the sake of Herodias, his brother Philip's wife. For John said unto him, it is not lawful for thee to have her. And when he would have put him to death, he feared the multitude because they counted him as a prophet. So we learn who Herod Antipas is. He took his brother Philip's wife and married her. Now what we want to see is it's possible for one to be bound to one and yet married to another. Do we see that? Herod Antipas had married Herodias, but Herodias was Philip's wife. Now what was wrong about this? Was it just simply that Herod Antipas had committed incest in taking his brother's wife? He had broken God's law from the beginning, and consequently, John told him it's not lawful. He did not say it is not lawful according to the law of the Jews. He did not say it is not lawful according to the law of Romans. He said it's not lawful for you to take your brother Philip's wife. Now, we see that that refers us back essentially to Genesis chapter 2, where the lawfulness of marriage is established. And what did God say about the lawfulness of marriage? A man is to do what? All right, leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and the two shall be one flesh. Well, obviously, this had violated that. We talked about Herod Archelaus. Now that he reigned when Joseph brought his family from Egypt to Nazareth. Now, we've recently talked about that from Matthew chapter 2. And we talked about this man, Herod Philip the Tetrarch, from the perspective of Luke's account, chapter 3, verse 1. Now, when you read of Herod the Tetrarch, even when you might read of Herod Philip the Tetrarch, don't become confused because the term Tetrarch is used. What does the term Tetrarch mean? One of four. That's right. And when Herod the Great was about to die, he divided up his kingdom among his four sons. Now, at this point, or along in this point, Herod Philip, his son, did something that caused his father to have suspicions, and so he disinherited him. That's why when you read in the accounts of historians, including Josephus, you read of Archelaus, Herod Antipas, and Herod Philip, as they reigned over the land that Herod the Great had initially reigned over. Now, we talked about this Herod, Herod Agrippa the First, and we talked about the context of Acts chapter 12, Herod Agrippa the First. We noted that in Acts chapter 12, this was the first time that the Jews had employed the authority of the Romans to persecute the church. Up until this point, the persecution of the church had been at the hand of the Jews personally. But now we find that Herod Agrippa has arrested James and Peter and in order that he might please the Jews. Acts chapter 12. And what did he do to James? He killed him. He beheaded James. And he kept Peter imprisoned as long as he could. But what happened to Peter? God let him out. All right, he was released by an angel in Acts chapter 12. Now that brings us to Herod Agrippa the Second. And he's the man that heard Paul's defense in the book of Acts. We remember that Paul was arrested in what chapter? Acts chapter 21. And then he was taken by Claudius Lysias to the Sanhedrin, or no, the people. He was arrested and taken up the stairs to the people in Acts 22, where he made his defense to the Jews in the city of Jerusalem. And then he was taken to the Sanhedrin in Acts chapter 23, the Jewish court. And the Jewish court became divided. And check me, Richard. Claudius Lysias or Sergius Paulus? Claudius Lysias, I believe. Yes. Claudius Lysias. Took him from the court to keep the court from tearing him apart. And then delivered him before Felix, the Roman governor of this province. And then Felix, desiring to gain favor with the people, in Acts chapter 24, the last verse, left him imprisoned when Festus became his successor. And Festus heard Paul and would make a decision whether to release him or send him forward. And Paul appealed his case to Caesar. Now, when Herod was in the area, and Festus learned that the king is here, he desired that the king come so that he could have proper authorization for sending Paul to Caesar, as we mentioned Wednesday night, to know what to put on the paper charging him with. And Agrippa said, he's done nothing worthy of death. If he'd not appealed to Caesar, then he could be released. But he has appealed unto Caesar, and unto Caesar he shall go. Now, we've studied concerning these men enough, I think, for our purposes to see that there weren't any of them that were good. Yes, Bruce?
In Acts chapter 13, wasn't that Herod smoked by God, killed by God?
In Acts chapter 13, that was Elymas. Oh, Acts chapter 12, yes. Yes, Acts chapter 12, yes. He was smitten and died of a bad case of worms. All right, any other questions or comments? All right. That takes us then to the worksheet. You'll find that worksheet on page 169 of your lesson book. I was speaking a while ago that I like to use questions primarily to review things that we've talked about already. Randy, question or comment?
Just to clear up in my head what you just said, the Herod in Acts 12 is the first.
The first, that's correct. Yeah, Agrippa the first. And then Acts 24 and 5, the second. Yeah, okay. All right, this worksheet. This is kind of a fill-in-the-blank kind of thing. Identifying which Herod did these things. The first of the Herodian family to have power in Palestine was who? To have power in Palestine. All right, Antipater. And Antipater, then, when he died, gave it to Herod the Great. All right? And who ordered John the Baptist to be killed? Which Herod? Herod Antipas. That's right. Who ordered the killing of the babies of Bethlehem, 2 years old and under? All right, Herod the Great. When you think of the perhaps meanest of the bunch, think of Herod the Great. Who was it that was on the throne when Jesus was tried? All right, Herod Antipas. Who killed James the Apostle? You just said that a while ago, Randy. That was Agrippa the First, that's right. And who heard Paul's defense? Herod Agrippa the Second. By the way, what chapters is it, or chapter in particular, where Paul makes his defense before this Herod? Acts 26. Very good. Herodias was his first wife. Herod Philip. That's right. This is the one that was disinherited.
His wife first.
His wife, yeah, first. I didn't read that right, did I? Okay, thank you. Joseph took the child, Jesus of Nazareth, when he heard this man was reigning in Judea. All right, Archelaus. And who rebuilt the temple?
Herod the Great.
Herod the Great, yes. Who was it that imprisoned Peter, thinking to please the Jews? Herod Agrippa the First, yes. Jesus grew up in his territory. Herod Antipas, yes. And who built Caesarea? All right, Herod the Great. Why was Caesarea, by the way, why was it built? As a port city, yes. We've looked at our map many, many times, and we'll have occasion to look at it some more, to note that this particular area was very significant as far as commerce is concerned. And commerce at that particular point was brought into the land of Palestine for the most part through Tyre, somewhat through Sidon. But those ports were not big enough to accommodate large shipping vessels. So Herod the Great built a larger port in Caesarea and named it after Caesar. So that's what we see about that. What was the nationality of the Herods? Idumean, that's right, or Edomites. We find that the Greeks had named them Idumeans, or they were known after this period of time as Idumeans. What was their religion? All right. They were acquainted with the customs of the Jews, sort of, kind of. In Acts chapter 26, in verse 3, Paul said that he was glad to make his defense before Herod because Herod was familiar with the customs and manners of the Jews. Yes, Richard?
Well, during the Hasmonean dynasty, John Hyrcanus II conquered Edom.
Yes.
And forced them all to be Jews.
Yes. Yes.
That was, of course, a number of years before this time.
Yes, probably. That's what I was thinking. Long in there, about 150 years. Yeah, a lot can happen in 150 years, especially when you look at these Herods as far as any resemblance of keeping the Jews' religion. They really didn't. They ruled, they were familiar with the Jews' religion, but they really didn't practice the Jews' religion.
The Hasmonean dynasty was as successful at forcing them to be Jews as the Pope was in forcing the Palestinians.
Well, that's right. And about as successful as we would be trying to force somebody to become a Christian. I've seen the time when I'd like to just go through the community with a baseball bat, but you can't do that. That won't accomplish anything. Folks have to be converted, and that means examining the evidence and being persuaded by it. And that's what Paul said to King Agrippa in Acts chapter 26. He said, "I would to God that not thou only, but that all might be such as I am." Now that follows Paul's, Agrippa's rather, statement, "Almost thou persuadest me to be a Christian." The key element there, the key word, is persuasion. Paul had been persuaded, and it was his desire that King Agrippa would be persuaded. Now, Richard just pointed out that the Maccabeans had conquered the Idumeans, from which the Herod family descended, and forced them to accept the Jewish religion. As far as the Jews were concerned, what was their religion? Well, we say Jewish by the law of Moses, but it was favorable toward the Greek customs, so they didn't keep all of the Jewish holidays and so forth, the practices of the Jews. Now, this is something that I want you to think carefully about. When you think about chronology, chronology is important. It's important from the standpoint of when you're studying with someone, you want to get the events in the right order. Frequently, well, most of the time when I study with people, I like to just by hand draw a line across the page and put on one side of the line an E that represents eternity, and on the other side of the line another E that represents eternity. And then the things that you're discussing fit on that timeline somewhere. And it's good to have the passages in mind in some kind of chronological order. It's good to have the characters in mind in some kind of chronological order. And it's certainly helpful if we have the Bible passages and even the prophets in some kind of chronological order. So chronology is important to our study. Now, when you look at the Caesars, here we see the Caesars as they fit on a timeline. From Augustus Caesar on down to Domitian, who was reigning, at least it's my conviction, at the time that the book of Revelation was written, when intense persecution was upon the hand or upon the heads of those who were Christians. Titus was the Roman ruler at the time of the fall of Jerusalem thereabouts. And so we want to notice this lineage of, I don't think I have some of these incorrect. That shouldn't be A.D. Some of those. Yes, it should. A.D. I don't know what I was thinking. Yeah, that's correct. Okay, we'll move right on. The Caesars. Herod the Great, from 37 about so to about 4 B.C. Archelaus from about 4 B.C. to 6 A.D. And then when we look at Judea and Samaria, I'm sorry, Antipatris, Galilee and Perea, about 4 to 39. And then Philip received the country east of Galilee, Agrippa the First, king of the whole country, primarily that of which Herod the Great had ruled over. And then Herod Agrippa the Second, his son, ruled over that same, for the most part, territory. Any questions or comments about this chronology? Yes, Randy and then Carolyn. Boy.
Just a quick one. On another slide weeks ago, I copied down some dates, and they don't match those. Is there some question sometimes on the exact...
Probably. Okay. Yeah, probably. When we get into this sometime, we compare calendars. Even when we talk about when Jesus was born, if we look at 000, it wasn't so. He was born about 4, was it B.C., as we compare the details of the Roman calendar.
So what's more important really is the sequence anyway.
Exactly right, yeah. And again, when you study the dates, you see enough variation, enough spread to get them in the proper chronology. A lot of it depends on what source you're reading after. We've talked before when we study about the fall of the city of Samaria to the Assyrians way back in Old Testament times in 2 Kings 17. Many date that 721. Some date it 722. And I read recently one that dated it 723. What difference does it make for the purposes of our study? Now, if you lived during that time, it might make a big difference what year it was. But for the purposes of our study, that slight variation doesn't make any difference. Now, this particular map is not in your lesson book. It's to display the land of Palestine under the reign of the Herods. And I appreciate, Richard, you all getting the new projector some months ago because it shows these colors. Significant enough that we can see the distinction. Yes, Randy?
Back to that last chart. What I'm trying to get firm grip on is the Herods, the only power they had was what was given to them by the Romans.
Yes.
So while Herod is, any one of these Herods is in charge, they're not really in charge.
Oh, no. No, they're in charge of a certain territory.
The Roman governor is really in charge of that. Too.
Yeah. But yeah. Well, the Roman governors, they had parts. But the Herod was the king of the whole area. But even he was under the thumb of Rome.
I guess what I'm trying to understand is if in the pyramid of power, if the Roman governor said Herod needs to die. Did he have the right to say Herod's gone? They're replacing with somebody else.
I don't think the Roman governor had that authority.
Caesar
did. Yeah, yeah. The Roman governor, as we talk about Felix, as we talk about Festus, it appears that they had authority over certain area.
Would they be considered equals under Caesar?
Yeah, I think so, as they ruled over a certain province.
With the exception of capital punishment.
With that exception, yeah. And by the way, let me throw this out just for consideration. I find it a bit of irony that, and I'm jumping way ahead in our study, that the Jews, as far as the trials of Jesus is concerned, they made him jump through all the proper hoops, so that it was, in fact, the Roman authorities that said to execute him. But when you come to Stephen, it's altogether another matter. Stephen in the same city. Just a few chapters later, as far as the timeline is concerned, would appear just a short time later. Stephen is making his defense before the Jews, and they stone him to death. There's no evidence that they run him through the Roman courts. They just stone him to death. And there's a lingering question in my mind, and that's all it is. It's a lingering question. I don't know of any way to answer it. Did they get in trouble with Romans? Or how were they able to get by with that when they executed Jesus through the hand of the Romans, through the proper protocol, but not Stephen?
I thought about that before, too. I just assumed that they had been emboldened. In fact, they wanted Jesus dead. They finally got permission.
Yeah.
And they thought, well, permission extends on now.
I don't know. I just don't. I have some speculative ideas, but I don't know.
It appears in studying just a little bit about the Romans and how they handled things in their outer provinces that they let them do to a large extent what they wanted to unless they perceived that somehow this was going to lead to some sort of revolt or heaven forbid, the non-payment of taxes.
Oh, yeah.
And so, but you'll remember that during one of the preaching trips, they took Paul and stoned him, essentially to death. And that was in a Roman province.
Yeah.
So they, you know, you can see by the fact that Herod sent and had John beheaded just at the behest of his stepdaughter. They didn't care about life, especially about the life of Jews.
Yeah.
And so they couldn't care less if these people killed one another. But they wanted to make sure that they weren't fomenting rebellion and that they weren't creating a big stir. I think that's why when all of them started yelling, crucify him, crucify him, I said, okay, well, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, just another guy as far as he was concerned, so go ahead and crucify him.
Yeah. Well, perhaps. And then from Roman perspective, Jesus was identified as King of the Jews. So from a political perspective, that could be seen as a threat to the Roman Empire. But Stephen had no such place. He was, from a practical standpoint of the Roman authorities, he was nobody. Maybe that has something.
That was my
point. Okay. All right. Well, this chart simply displays the areas that the Herods ruled over. You'll notice this first black line up here, Herod the Great's kingdom. And it's defined the borders of this black line. You see how large it is. And then Herod Archelaus, Herod Antipas, and Philip the Tetrarch. You see how they're given portions of the land when Herod died. And then on this particular map, we see again the kingdom of Herod Agrippa the First, pretty much what his father, what his great-grandfather had. He ruled over the land of Palestine, and the same concerning Herod Agrippa the Second. Now here I have marked Herod Agrippa the Second and his place in Caesarea. But look, if you will, at this point, the division of the land. You've got Samaria, Galilee, Judea, and Perea. As we looked at our other chart showing the areas that the various sons of Herod the Great ruled over. And now you have his, I'm going to have to look at the chart, grandson or great-grandson? Great-grandson, Herod Agrippa the Second, ruled over. Okay? Any questions or comments just here? All right. Well, that's the end of that series of slides. Turn, if you will, in your lesson book to page number 170. Number 170. Pick up the right one here. Page 170 begins the discussion of the life of Christ. And of course, you're reading about from the text, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Please identify on page 170 of your lesson book the map number 22 and label the places on that map. That will be important for us as we continue our study. You should have a blank map. You should also have a map that is not blank where you can identify these places. Now, first of all, when we talk about the life of Christ, I think you will be impressed when we study all the places that Christ preached. But when we go back to our text in Matthew chapter 2, the wise men expected to find Jesus in Jerusalem, but he was not there. When inquiry was made, what was it that the prophet said about where Jesus was to be born? Not Jerusalem. Bethlehem. Now, one of the things that we've studied about the city of Bethlehem, or should I say the cities of Bethlehem, there are two that are identified in the land of Canaan. One, of course, identified here in the New Testament, identified also in the Old Testament text of Micah chapter 5, verse 2, as Micah prophesied concerning the birthplace of Jesus. That's what's referenced in the account here of Matthew chapter 2. But there was another Bethlehem that is identified in the Bible. And where is it found? Up in the tribe of Zebulun, way up to the north. But if you'll read in Micah chapter 5, verse 2, Micah was very specific as to which Bethlehem Jesus was to be born in. He would be born in Bethlehem, Ephrathah, or Bethlehem in Judah, or Judea. Very specific about where he was to be born. Now, one of the things that we want to notice about why men might expect that the Messiah would be born in Jerusalem. Tell me about Jerusalem. It was the capital, right. It was the cultural and religious center of the land. Jews traveled from all over to keep various feast days. We see evidence of that not only in the Gospels, but as we come to the second chapter of the book of Acts, we learn on that first Pentecost following the resurrection of Christ, about verse 4, devout Jews from all over the world were gathered in the city of Jerusalem to observe these feast days. Very significant to us. And certainly you would expect that the birthplace of the Lord, the Messiah, might be the city of Jerusalem. But not so. Yes, David?
When Abraham offered up Isaac, was it in Jerusalem or where Jerusalem would be?
Yes, Mount Moriah. It is believed by many scholars that this is the place where Jerusalem eventually was. Yes. All right. Here are some of the feast days that were observed in Jerusalem. Now, when we look at the Passover, where do we find its origin? Coming out of Egypt. That's right. Exodus chapter 12. They were commanded to remember the Passover, and that this was to be a yearly feast so that they would use it to teach their children of the blessings that God bestowed upon them in bringing them up out of the land of Egypt. The Feast of Pentecost, also required by the law of Moses. What was its significance? We see that in Acts 2. Sometimes, and I've been guilty of this in years gone by, of saying the day of Pentecost, like there was only one. And it too was a yearly observance of a certain feast. What was it? Yes, go a little further with that. Okay. Anybody want to help him out? Had to do with the harvest season as well. So this was a very important feast for, I think what you're referring to, the Feast of the Booths, had to do with the period of wilderness wandering and God's provisions for them. You have something further there? Okay, you're looking? Okay. Well, we also have, while Randy's looking, the Feast of Atonement. What was its significance? We might infer in that the sacrifice of atonement. What was it for? How often was it engaged in?
Once a year.
Once a year. What was its significance?
To remove the sins of Israel.
All right. And the sacrifice of the lamb was offered, and the blood of the lamb was offered for sin. A portion of the lamb was to be eaten by the priest, and this was to atone for the sins of the nation of Israel. And then the Feast of Purim. What was that? We don't familiarize ourselves, I don't guess, with that quite as much. What was this particular feast?
Festival of Lights. That was the deliverance from the Jews being killed by the
Hiram.
By what's his name?
Yeah, not Hiram. Haman. Thank you, Haman. All right, wicked Haman. He proposed that the king write an order, and this was during the time of the restoration of Israel to the land of Palestine after the period of captivity by the Babylonians. And under the reign of the Persians, we know that the wicked man Haman hated Mordecai, who was an Israelite. In order to get Mordecai dead, he got the king to order that all the Jews be killed. Now, what's the problem with that?
The queen was Jewish.
Pardon me?
The queen is a Jew.
All right. He had married Esther, who was a Jew. And if you kill all the Jews, not only are you going to kill the queen, but what else are you going to do that's really more important than just killing the queen? What was it that God had promised would descend from Abraham? The seed. That's right. Through the seed of Abraham, all families of the earth would be blessed. Now, if you destroy all of Abraham's seed, what's going to happen to the promise that God made? See, it wouldn't come to pass. So Esther, through a series of events, just to abbreviate that, provided deliverance for the Jews. And then when that was all over, there was a feast in Esther chapter 9 dedicated to the deliverance of the Jews from the hand of the Persians. And then the Feast of Dedication, I think, is what you were referring to. Richard, explain that to us.
Well, that's the one where the Jews felt that actually that when Judas Maccabeus and his followers went in and were able to recapture the temple, they cleansed it and all that sort of stuff, and then they were going to go purify it, and they only found one vial of oil, and so they perceived that a miracle took place, because that oil then lasted for 8 days.
All right. And is that feast observed today, or that occasion?
Yeah.
And what's it called?
Hanukkah.
Hanukkah among the Jews. That's still remembered of what was done. All right. So these feast days were very significant to the Jews. And being very significant to the Jews, you would expect that the city of Jerusalem would be the prominent place. Let's go to Jerusalem, and there the Messiah will be born. But not so. Also, we might want to note here regarding the importance of Jerusalem that the temple served as the rallying point for their religion and for all their Jewish customs. The rabbinical schools flourished in the city of Jerusalem. In Acts chapter 22, when Paul was making his defense before the people of the Jews, he said that he was brought up in Jerusalem at the feet of Gamaliel, who was a noteworthy teacher among the Jews. And it appears that this was something that was done among many of the more wealthy Jews to send their children to these rabbinical schools in Jerusalem. Now, Jerusalem, of all places, should have been prepared for the coming of Jesus. When we think about Jerusalem being the center of the cultural and religious life of the Jews, you've got all these religious leaders there who should have been familiar with the law. Now, I have on the chart This was a gathering place of the scribes and the learned men. We're going to call the learned men lawyers. They were lawyers of the law of Moses. So you've got the scribes, and what did they do? All right, they wrote it down. Now, let me just ask you, those of you who are college age, you ever take notes in a class? And then when you're rehearsing for the test, you may rewrite those notes? You ever do that? I mean, why do you do that? All right, helps you remember. The more you write it, the more you remember it. All right, it gives you the opportunity to see it, to write it, to read it, and the more times you input, then the idea is the better chances are that you will remember it. So these scribes and these lawyers, would you think that they would be familiar with what the law of Moses said about the coming of the Messiah? You'd like to think that. Yet we find that it became the most severe location of persecution in the early days of the church. In fact, when you read in Acts chapter 3, it begins, Acts chapter 4, 5, and then on into chapter 7 with the death of Stephen, the early verses of chapter 8, and then beginning chapter 9, we see that Saul made havoc of the church. But what's the place where all this was occurring? The city of Jerusalem. And it wasn't until we come to Acts chapter 8 that the gospel begins to go beyond Jerusalem. Here we have the Samaritans. And then chapter 10, who do we begin with conversion? The Gentiles, with the household of Cornelius. But let's open our Bibles to a few of these passages and notice that we're talking about these learned men who were responsible for the death of Jesus. Yes, Randy? Pardon me? Oh, you could, yes.
You had it up there.
I did. I just made reference to them.
Leviticus 23 and Deuteronomy 16. The one in Leviticus is 15 and 16. You shall also count for yourselves from the day after the Sabbath, from the day when you brought in the sheep and the wave offering. There shall be 7 complete Sabbaths. You shall count 50 days to the day after the 7th Sabbath. Then you shall present a new grain offering to the Lord.
All right.
In Deuteronomy, that's called the Feast of the Weeks.
Okay, all right.
I was confused with the Feast of the Booths, which is down there in Deuteronomy 16:16. It says, three times a year, all your males shall appear before the Lord your God in the place which he chooses, at the Feast of the Unleavened Bread, and at the Feast of Weeks, and at the Feast of Booths. And they shall not appear before the Lord at the end. So those were the three required feasts of the early Jerusalem.
Okay. All right. Excellent. Excellent. So you would expect the city of Jerusalem to be a very prominent place. Jews gathering there, and thus the possibility of the Messiah being born there. But no, Micah said he won't be born there. It'd been Micah. Yes, I'm being Drew and being Bethlehem. Thank you. Yes. Yes, yes, very good. And of course, the events during that 400-year period between the Testaments goes a long way to explain why the pendulum swung from one extreme to the other. They're looking for the coming of the Messiah, and they think that he's going to lead them in battle against their oppressors and establish an earthly kingdom. And that just wasn't so. And during the period of the Maccabees, I think you see the pendulum swing to an extreme because the temple has been cleansed. The Syrians have been driven back. And so it becomes a great occasion in their history. Lynn?
So they were then, they would have been expecting a grown man, not a child.
Likely, yes. Oh, yes. That's interesting. That's an interesting observation. somebody that would raise up among their ranks to a position of military glory. Yeah. And Jesus was not. And that explains why they denied the possibility that he was the Messiah, because you're the carpenter's son. You're nobody. You don't have any royalty in your blood. Of course, they didn't understand that he did. But that was the case. In Matthew 26, if you'll note with me in verse 57, Matthew 26, verse 57. Let me back up, if you will, to verse 55 in Matthew chapter 26. In verse 55, it says, "In that hour said Jesus to the multitudes, are ye come out as against a robber with swords and staves to seize me? I sat daily in the temple, teaching, and you took me not. But all this has come to pass, that the scriptures of the prophets might be fulfilled. Then all the disciples left him and fled. And they that had taken Jesus led him away to the house of Caiaphas, the high priest, where the scribes and the elders were gathered together. But Peter followed him afar off into the court, under the court of the high priest, and entered in, and sat with the officers to see the end." Now, our emphasis is not on verse 58, but primarily on verse 57, because it tells us who it was that had the opportunity to interrogate Jesus. He was taken to the house of Caiaphas, the high priest, and who was also gathered at Caiaphas' house. The scribes and the elders. You see, we've got learned men. These are not just the general run-of-the-mill Jews. These are people who knew the law. And they're gathered in the house of the high priest. And what was their decision when they came to the end of their efforts? What do we do with Jesus? Kill him. Now, they knew they couldn't do that without Roman authority, but that was their desire. And if you'll drop down in the text of chapter 27 on into the latter part of that chapter, you'll note that they deliver him before Pilate, the Roman authority, who raises the question, why? What evil has he done? Why do you want him dead? And what is it then that they try to explain? All right, he's claimed that he's the king of the Jews. And so Pilate sentences him to be executed. Now, in Acts, as the Apostle Peter begins to preach, and Paul, as he begins to preach or write in 1 Corinthians chapter 2, says that your fathers did it in ignorance. Now, how would you like to be responsible of something so severe when you thought what you were doing was pleasing the Lord? Okay? We'll start with that in our next study.